This is episode 184 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here on SEScoops.com. It is Tuesday, October 11th, 2011. I am the Solid Monster. Yes, it is a midweek sound off. It's been a long time since the show has stirred me up so much that I felt the need to record an emergency sound off the day after. Well, that streak has come to an end. And so before I get into this here, I just want to say that if you are the kind of person who is easily offended by coarse language, if you are the kind of person who is easily offended by opinions that differ from yours, in other words, if you were one of the few people who actually enjoyed Monday Night Raw last night, and you don't take very kindly to hearing opinions that do differ from yours, my suggestion to you would be to turn this podcast off right about now. For the rest of you, let's talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly from last night's Monday Night Raw, which emanated from Oklahoma City. This was easily the worst Raw of the entire year. What a shit show this was on Monday night. Not surprising, considering that Vince McMahon, much like he did last week, apparently ordered several rewrites of the show up until just a few hours before they actually went on the air. Nobody knows what the hell they're doing in this company these days. Even with a pretty good opening couple of minutes, I will say, on this show, this show was absolutely atrocious, not only because it was so boring, but just how badly damaging it was to the company overall. I mean, the effects of this show are going to be felt for a long time to come. And the three biggest things to take away from this show are, number one, Triple H is the man. Number two, everyone else on Raw sucks and is inferior. And number three, the so-called, quote, rebel, CM Punk, is officially dead as a doornail. He has been completely neutered on this show. And by the way, this show apparently did a 3.2 rating against some pretty stiff sports competition last night, which is higher than it's been doing of late. But the key here is that the audience dropped like a stone during the second hour, which should come as no surprise since WWE gave them absolutely no reason to stick around. But I did, so let's get on with this, shall we? The good. I actually liked the first 20 minutes or so of this show because it was different. And I'm not going to ever fault them for trying something different. Anything out of the ordinary for this company gets a thumbs up from me, because they're so formulaic, they're so predictable, they have their set ways. When they opened the show, there was nobody around. Triple H is walking by himself backstage. There's no announcers at ringside. It's a cold open. I thought that was pretty cool. And it all went downhill the moment that Vince McMahon's music hit. I mean, there was nothing else on this show that I would classify as good. This was it. Now, as far as the bad, there was no bad on this show either. Oh no, everything was ugly. It's the first time I've done a review here where virtually the entire show is in the ugly category. I mean, to say that somebody beat this show over the head with an ugly stick would be an understatement. It got beaten over the head with a flaming ugly stick wrapped in barbed wire. So let's talk about this, shall we? When did this show take a turn for the worse? As I said, I enjoyed the initial open, but even that was far from perfect. We had Triple H come to the ring. He said that he wasn't going to quit no matter what. All the wrestlers were protesting in the parking lot, so he said he would strip down to his underwear and wrestle a broomstick for the next 2 hours if he had to, and that the broomstick would give him a better match than most of the guys in the parking lot. Amazing. I guess we shouldn't be surprised, considering this is the same man who on TV earlier this year claimed that there was no competition left for him in the locker room. Everybody on the roster is a jobber, and they can't hold my jock strap. That's basically what the message was here. And this includes the WWE champion, Alberto Del Rio, because he was also among all the people protesting outside. So keep that in mind. So then we get John Cena's music hitting, and of course I immediately cringe. He comes out, stares into the camera, and you know, he does this thing now where when he comes out through the curtain, he looks into the camera and he says something before he comes to the ring. So tonight, he says, it's time to get serious. Boy, I wish he would take that approach more often. So Cena comes to the ring. He says that everybody in the parking lot tried to lobby him to join their cause, which includes Alberto Del Rio, I guess, the guy he's been feuding with. He said that Triple H never even bothered texting him. Well, he should have asked Kevin Nash. I'm sure he would have texted him. Cena says that Cena said something very bizarre here. He claimed that most of the guys in the parking lot had never known any boss other than Triple H. The same Triple H that has been on the job for what? 3 months now? I thought that was pretty stupid. So then he got all dramatic, as only Cena can. Says that he's a company man. No shit. He says to Triple H, "You're my boss." That's what John Cena does. He says, "I'm all about Monday Night Raw, so I'm staying." So then we get Sheamus coming out, almost on cue. Talked about how he put Triple H out of action last year with a lead pipe, and how Triple H came back and gave him the arse-kicking of a lifetime. That's what he said, arse-kicking. He said that he, too, was here to stay. And we got CM Punk, who came out, said that he feels responsible for this whole thing. And anyway, this went on for a while. It all led to him siding with his bitter rival Triple H, his bitter rival John Cena, and Sheamus. So Triple H makes a match between Cena and Sheamus. Hunter says that he's going to be the special referee, and Punk will be on guest commentary since there's no announcers at ringside. And I was still liking this segment at this point. Then they went and did comedy, with Triple H putting his arm around Punk, Punk asking if he could wear Hunter's blazer. Triple H tells him, "Sure you can!" Now keep in mind, it was no more than a month ago that CM Punk was insulting the man's wife. Remember that? So mad did this get Triple H back then that he flat out said that it was no longer about business with Punk. It was personal. And here we are after Triple H beat him in the middle of the ring, of course without retribution, just a few weeks later, and they're like bosom buddies in the middle of the ring. You see, this is why nobody gives a fuck anymore about wrestling. Punk was the only guy, he was the one guy, that you could not afford to fuck up because he made people believe, actually believe that he was different. He was special. He was anti-establishment. And now look at him. Look at him wearing Triple H's blazer, which looked to be about three sizes too big for Punk. He looked like a little kid wearing his father's jacket. Looks like Stephanie McMahon is going to have to go shopping this weekend to look for a new Gucci purse, because the one that she has now can't possibly hold both her husband's balls and Punk's balls at the same time. You know, the NBA and its players, they're currently locked in a war over how to divide billions of dollars in profits that the league reaps. And they've already announced that they've canceled the first 100 games of the season. It's going to be December at the earliest before they play a single game of basketball. And to me, this would be the equivalent of having the NBA go live on the air for its first scheduled game anyway, and having an empty court with no players. And David Stern says, "You know what? Screw it. We'll bring back Michael Jordan and we'll have him play ball against Shaq, and I'll referee the entire game." Guess what? That wouldn't work. Just like this didn't work. So what's the first thing that the anti-establishment CM Punk does during this show? Mind you, the show where everything is being done so spontaneously. He throws it to commercial break. That's just unbelievable. And don't give me that crap about how, oh, they have to take commercials. I know they have to take commercials. Is it so hard for CM Punk to sit down, put the headset on, pretend that somebody's yelling in his ear, which I'm sure they were, and be like, "No, we're not going to take a commercial. Don't cut me off. I'm not going to commercial," and then just go to commercial anyway? It just sounded stupid with Punk throwing it to commercial. So anyway, they come back, and we really don't get much of a match before who should come out but the returning Vincent Kennedy McMahon. Yes, the same Vincent Kennedy McMahon who was relieved of his duties as chairman not 3 months earlier. And I know back when they did that whole angle with Vince and Triple H and Vince broke down crying and everything, I don't recall them using the word fired for Vince. And they probably didn't use that word on purpose, but for all intents and purposes, his ass got fired. So anyway, he comes out to the ring, and what do I see? But I see the Chiron on the bottom of the screen, which is the graphic they put up with the person's name. And above Vince McMahon's name is the title WWE Chairman. So all along, nothing ever really changed. I mean, we knew this already, but this just confirmed it. Fuck this show. I'm going to be saying this many times, by the way, before this review is over, so get used to it. So Vince is all smiles. He tells John Cena, Sheamus, and Punk to leave. Just leave. So the match is a no contest, I guess. And why not? I mean, matches don't really matter around here anyway. You know, I'm a fair person. I call it like I see it. if I'm going to criticize TNA for having a show, as they did at least once before, where over an hour goes by without any wrestling, then I got to call WWE on the carpet for the same thing. I mean, it may not have been a full hour, but a large part of the first half of this show went by without any real action to speak of. And I'm not even just talking about wrestling. I'm talking action of any kind. That is inexcusable. Anyway, we never did see John Cena again for the rest of the night, so at least something good came out of this. So, Vince says he got there as soon as he could. The board of directors is concerned that things are getting too far out of hand, and it could jeopardize WrestleMania, he says. Yeah, not if those bozos in the parking lot know what's good for their wallets, it won't. As if they'd sit out long enough to cancel Mania. It's just, you know, there's a reason that there's never been a union in wrestling. It's because it would never work. So, much the same way Triple H did to Vince back in July, he tells Hunter that the board has ruled that his services are no longer needed as COO. Or maybe I just heard it that way, because now I'm reading on some sites where apparently Jerry Lawler may have said later in the show on commentary that Triple H is in fact still COO, but he just has no power over Raw. Which, if that's the case, that makes absolutely no sense. So, then Vince says that the board has appointed an interim acting general manager for Monday Night Raw. The executive vice president of talent relations, John Laurinaitis. Until they could find a permanent replacement, just put Mick Foley in there and get it over with already. I mean, Laurinaitis, he got a lot of heat for this, I will say that. So that's a plus, I guess. But again, with this GM nonsense, I mean, really, we just went through an entire year plus of this anonymous Raw general manager bullshit that went absolutely nowhere. It's just been completely forgotten about. You've got Triple H out there calling the shots every week on Raw and SmackDown, yet Teddy Long is still the GM on that brand. Why? What is the point? You know, there's a bigger issue here that I want to address. For months now, on WWE TV, we have had this storyline with Vince McMahon being fired and Triple H being appointed as COO and coming out every week and talking about what a tough job it is and this and that. Now we have Vince coming back to tell Triple H that he's being relieved of his duties and Johnny Ace is the Raw GM until they find someone else to be the Raw GM. Meanwhile, over on Impact, we've had this power struggle storyline going on for what feels like years now. And every goddamn week, someone else has the power in TNA. One week it's Hogan and Bischoff, the next week it's The Network, and then it's Immortal again, and then it's Kurt Angle, then it's Sting, but Sting never really had any power. He was just fucking around with everybody. And back and forth we go. And the point that I'm trying to make here is this. Who gives a flying fuck who has the power on any wrestling show? Who in their right mind could possibly give a shit about any of this? What difference does it make who's in charge? What difference does it make whether Vince McMahon is in charge, or Triple H, or Teddy Long, or Johnny Ace, or Mick Foley, or Hulk Hogan, or Dixie Carter, or Spike TV, or a goddamn laptop computer? How is this supposed to make me want to pay money to see this shit on pay-per-view once, or even sometimes twice a month? I mean, since the beginning of time, or at least the modern TV era of pro wrestling, go back about 30 years, there has almost always been some sort of authority figure at the helm. Okay, I get that. Whether it was Jim Crockett or better yet, take Jack Tunney as an example. Okay, for years on TV, he was the president of the WWF. But unless there was an important decision he was forced to render, you know, in which case he'd probably tape a promo that would air from his office, or he'd show up for a quick in-ring segment and then get the hell out of Dodge, every week their TV show would go on the air, and lo and behold, they would already have a card set up for viewers. What a novel concept that is. I mean, they would already have the show booked, and we had an hour to get everything in. None of this bullshit where they seemingly go on the air every week without a main event. So someone comes out and makes a bunch of matches, which in and of itself takes about 20 minutes of airtime. No, back then the show went on the air, and you went right into the action, or the promo, or whatever was booked by the powers that be. Now, we're subjected every week to power struggles and votes of confidence, and they wonder why wrestling isn't cool anymore. They wonder, why are all these people not watching our show anymore? Because your show sucks, that's why. So I just had to get that off my chest, because it's been bugging me for a while now. So now the entire shitty roster comes back. They parade back into the building like a bunch of complete fools. They protested and they protested, and they ended up with John Laryngitis as their new boss, who's greeting them all, by the way, as they're coming into the building. And then along comes John Morrison. Now, I've ragged on Morrison a lot, on his promo ability and that sort of thing. He is an absolutely terrible promo guy. But he's very talented in the ring. I've never taken that away from him. And he was well on his way earlier this year to being taken seriously as a world title contender, until his attitude and his crazy-ass girlfriend or ex-girlfriend now, depending on who you believe, before they ruined it for him. And anyway, here he is on the show. He just casually walks up to Johnny Ace and says that he sucks. The most honest thing I heard on this entire show. So Laryngitis books him in a match with Christian. Both men are in street clothes. I didn't even mind that, really. Again, it was different. You know, it looked different. It felt different. I kind of dug that. And I thought it was cool. So then anyone with half a brain could see where this was going. Christian beats Morrison clean with a spear in about a minute. After the match, he gets beat up some more by Dolph Ziggler, Jack Swagger, Cody Rhodes. They all had come to the ring with Christian. And I like them as a little group, but who the hell knows if they're even officially a group or not. They're a group 1 week, and next week, who the hell knows. So anyway, there's another guy buried 6 feet under. Morrison's contract is up soon, by the way, and it's looking more and more like he may be gone from the company. And really, I mean, who could blame the guy? I certainly don't. TNA will snatch him up in a heartbeat, and I gotta say, in this case, I'm fully okay with that. Morrison is a guy that, I mean, he's not going to make a damn bit of difference to their ratings, and we all know how important the ratings are to TNA. Believe me, if Hulk Hogan, Eric Bischoff, Sting, Kurt Angle, and all these guys don't move the ratings needle, John Morrison is not going to move the ratings needle, but he would be a great addition to their roster. You know, so long as Bruce Pritchard doesn't listen to Vince Russo. So that's the deal with Morrison for the people who have been asking. And on this show, really every week, he's just treated as a nothing. And quite frankly, the sooner he gets out of this company, I think the better off he'll be. Randy Orton and Mark Henry had a match on this show. Orton won by DQ after Cody Rhodes interfered, broke up a pinfall attempt after Orton nailed the champion with an RKO. At least it wasn't for the title, but last time I checked, Big Show is getting the next match with Henry. So I'm not quite sure what the point of this was. After the match, Henry nailed Orton with two World's Strongest Slams, and after the first one, he actually hooked the leg to try to pin Randy Orton. And the poor guy apparently didn't realize that the match was over, so he looked like a complete idiot. Cody nailed Orton with the crossroads, put a paper bag over his head, and then he took the microphone. And if you listen to Sound Off 183, you know my thoughts on Cody's promos on TV. They suck. They suck, because they won't let him speak like a normal human being. Anybody who's heard Cody Rhodes speak or cut a promo like a normal person, he's pretty goddamn good. But doing this character and doing that voice, not so much. Not so much. And again, they won't let him speak like a normal human being. This was insufferable. And that stupid cartoon laugh he did at the end that just went on forever and ever, just stupid stuff. And the worst part of this, to me, was that he didn't even grab the Intercontinental title when he left. Not because it means anything, but personally, I can never get enough of looking at that belt. It's easily the best-looking belt in the entire company. I was kind of hoping he'd pick it up and flaunt it, but he did not. And at least they're going with Orton versus Rhodes as a direction, as I hope they would. Pretty sure I talked about that on the last show. I don't know if it's going to be for the title or not, but I guess it really doesn't matter. Then we had Kelly and Eve beating Rosa Mendez and Tamina. Rosa Mendez has no business being in a wrestling ring. She is god-awful. And Kelly also sucks, but putting them in the ring together was quite the spectacle. And I don't really have anything else to say about this. This sucked. So then we get our esteemed Raw general manager, Super Dave Osborne, comes down to the ring and he announces, "Are you ready for this now?" This is a whopper here. No, seriously, are you ready? He announces that at Vengeance, it's going to be Alberto Del Rio defending the WWE title against John Cena. And Oklahoma City is my new favorite wrestling city, because they could not have cared less about this announcement, and I loved it. Loved it. So yeah, I think I'll save my money on that one. So then Laryngitis summons Jim Ross, hometown boy, into the ring, and the moment that he even looked in the direction of the announcers, I knew exactly where this was going. They were, of course, in JR's hometown in Oklahoma. And in fact, if you go back and watch when Ross got up from his seat to come into the ring, you could see his wife, Jan, sitting in the front row right behind him, all smiles. She wouldn't be smiling for very long. Laryngitis said that JR walked out on Triple H, walked out on the fans. In fact, he walked out on the entire state of Oklahoma. He called him an ingrate, and then he fired Jim Ross right in front of his wife and all of his hometown fans. Here's the deal. In storyline, Jim Ross deserved to be fired. He was an ingrate for walking out on Triple H last week. The man who brought him back in the first place after Vince McMahon got rid of him. So to me, that part actually makes sense. But as usual, it was WWE. Well, really, it was Vince McMahon. Getting their jollies on making an absolute mockery of Jim Ross. And apparently, this was not in the final version of the script. So there is a very good chance that Jim Ross did not know that this was coming. In fact, he said as much on his Twitter. And, you know, you could take that as a work or a shoot, but based on what I've read, he really did not know that he was being fired. And I would assume his wife did not know that he was being fired. Even though he should have, quite frankly, because even I knew that they were going to fuck with JR in some way. But, yeah. They pulled this shit when they drafted him from Raw to SmackDown in 2008. They didn't tell him because they wanted his real reaction on camera, because this makes Vince McMahon laugh, you see. So the best part about this entire segment, which completely enraged me, by the way, the best part about this was Ross's reaction. He completely no-sold being fired. You know, he was told he was fired. He respectfully tipped his cowboy hat at Laryngitis, left the ring, collected his papers, and walked off. Total poker face on his part. And if I were him, I would have added in maybe a little shrug of the shoulders to complete the whole I-don't-give-a-shit look, just to stick it to Vince McMahon. And as Ross walked out, the old Michael Cole resurfaced. He would not shut up. He was making fun of Jim Ross, kept mentioning John Wayne over and over again. And JR, for those of you who don't know, he actually used to keep a cardboard cutout of John Wayne in his office at Titan Tower when he lived in Stamford. I recall seeing it in the background on a documentary once while he was being filmed. Maybe it was Beyond the Mat, I don't know. But anyway, Cole is just screaming repeatedly to the point that I almost turned the show off at this point. I seriously thought about putting the baseball game on and protesting the rest of the show. I'm sorry I didn't, quite frankly. Fuck this show. Just fuck this show. By the way, will someone tell Michael Cole that what Santino does when he comes out, which this imbecile was mimicking here, is not a fucking trumpet. It is a goddamn trombone. Who the hell plays a trumpet like that anyway? He also needs to stop playing with his hands, as I said on Twitter. He plays with his hands an awful lot whenever they show him on camera, and he needs to stop that. It's very, very effeminate when he does that. You may want to check also this video now I see on WWE.com. Or maybe not, because it'll probably just piss you off even more. I know it did me. They put video on there. They're trying to do their best TMZ impersonation. And it's video, basically, of Jim Ross after he got fired, walking through the backstage area. And there's somebody off camera, some WWE.com goofball, who you can't see. But they've got the boom mic and the camera. They're all up in JR's face as he's walking away. And they're just peppering him with questions about being fired. How does it feel to be fired in your hometown? And then they ask him some stupid bullshit question at the end about, is it true that the TV audience finds John Laryngitis more attractive than you? Because you see, Jim Ross has Bell's palsy and he's an ugly mofo. That's basically what they mean. How anybody can support a company that does this while at the same time runs an anti-bullying campaign, I'll never know. I tell you what, I actually hope this comes up during Linda McMahon's Senate campaign and gets shoved right back in their faces, because to me that would be quite appropriate. So Jim Ross is gone for the millionth time, and we are once again left with Jerry Lawler and Michael Cole, and possibly Booker T, since they apparently insist on having three-man booths. Somehow, somewhere along the way, three-man announce booths became the normal thing in WWE, and I don't know when the hell this started, but it needs to stop. So, when this show started, they showed the three empty announce chairs at ringside. When they did that, I sent a text message to someone joking that that was the best sight that anybody could ask for, and how I hoped that it would remain that way through the entire night. And obviously that didn't happen, but at this point in the show, I was begging for those three empty seats again. Then we had Mason Ryan coming out to some goofy Yoshitatsu-type music, I guess to convince everybody that, in case you didn't already know, the guy's a babyface now. He was all happy, he was smiling, and slapping hands with fans at ringside, and I just didn't know quite what to make of this. First of all, the man is ungodly huge. Just ungodly huge. He's going to tear something soon, I guarantee it. He teamed up with Kofi Kingston and Evan Bourne, who have new music, which I like, since it isn't just a remix of their individual songs. I mean, if you're going to commit to being a real tag team, you should have one entrance and one theme song, so I like that. They beat Dolph Ziggler, Jack Swagger, and David Otunga. And by the way, I take it that the entire storyline of Otunga filing a lawsuit against WWE on behalf of all the disgruntled heels now goes by the wayside, as does the Miz Truth lawsuit, I assume. And I'll get to them in a second. Another fine example, by the way, of nobody knowing what the fuck they're doing in this company. So back to the match. Mason Ryan pins Dolph Ziggler, the United States champion, which is ridiculous. I mean, the fact that Mason Ryan gets a spot on the main roster while Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose and Richie Steamboat and Claudio Castagnoli and soon enough Chris Hero are all toiling in obscurity down in FCW is a complete joke. I watched that match on YouTube between Rollins and Ambrose, by the way, the Ambrose being the former Jon Moxley on the Independence, and it was better than all but a handful of matches I've seen on pay-per-view this year in WWE. So why are they not on my television set yet? Why are they forcing this drug lord down my throat? Oh, that's right, because he's got big muscles and they don't. Fuck this show. Then we get our main event. Oh yes, we get our main event. Alberto Del Rio and CM Punk. And the crowd was so quiet during this match, you could literally hear the air conditioning in the arena rumbling in the background. That's never a good sign. This match barely got underway. Laryngitis came back out yet again to call the match off. The second such time, by the way, on this show. Because again, matches don't matter in WWE, so why would anybody pay money to see them? He turns it into a tag team match against the newly reinstated Miz and R-Truth, who just so happened to be there, and they just so happened to have their gear with them, no less. So they come out, they sing their stupid song, they tell the people they suck. That's a lie, of course. The people don't suck, this show sucks. Del Rio sells a knee injury a couple minutes in, then he bails. So that leaves CM Punk all by himself to fend for himself against both heels. He fights back, he nails a Randy Savage elbow off the top rope on Miz, goes to deliver the GTS, and then Truth breaks it up. Both guys beat on Punk until the referee just stops the match. Just calls for the bell. Hell of a finish to this match. So then not long after, who should come sprinting, and I do use that term loosely, sprinting to the ring, but Triple H, who beats up both men with some assistance from Punk. R-Truth, I think, ran off into the crowd. They cut away to one of those backstage segments that the fans in the arena can't see, where John Laryngitis, making his 28th appearance on this show, is standing with David Otunga, and he tells Otunga that he's going to have the board make a match for vengeance, pitting Miz and Truth against CM Punk and Triple H. And my only question here was, since when does he need board approval to make matches? Whatever. Show ended with Triple H and Punk shaking hands like the best of friends. And then they posed together on the turnbuckles. And apparently Triple H was channeling Trish Stratus here and was barking like a dog to end the show, because I sure as hell didn't see any words coming out of the guy's mouth. I don't know what the hell he was doing. But he was moving his lips around and he just looked completely stupid. But hey, the game is back on top, right? So all is right with the world. To me, this follows the exact same blueprint from Triple H's days with Steve Austin during the two-man power trip deal in 2001. First, he beats Austin in that Three Stages of Hell match at No Way Out, which Austin never got to avenge. Then he didn't want to go babyface and be Austin's opponent after WrestleMania X7, so instead, he stays heel and becomes his tag team partner. So that way, he could share in and take credit for all of his heat. And then Austin turns into a comedy figure, and Triple H looks like a bigger star in the process. Or at least he would have, had he not torn his quad. That's exactly what we're seeing here. Almost step by step. Punk is the hottest thing going, for at least a month. So Triple H starts a program with him. Or gets himself put into a program with him. And then he beats CM Punk in their one match, which Punk never gets a chance to avenge. And now, they're partners. It's amazing how these things work, isn't it? This was a horrendous television program. Not just a horrendous wrestling show, just the TV show in general. They took their main storyline, which was already convoluted and illogical enough as it is, but still showed some signs of life. And they put a pillow over its face and smothered it to death. That's exactly what they did here. And now it's up to the Great One to make the Survivor Series a success next month, because that is the only reason I am excited about going to that show right now. Just an absolutely terrible show, and again, it's been a long time since a show like this has pushed me. I couldn't even wait until the weekend. It's almost like therapy for me, so I can just, the words just pour out of me. I had to get this off my chest because I was going to lose sleep over it. Unbelievable. Unbelievable how you can just have a show that's good one week and absolute pure dog shit the next week. And the buck stops with Vince McMahon at the end of the day. There's a lot of very frustrated people who work in WWE right now. Not everybody deserves the blame, but you know what? They're all culpable in some way, shape, or form for going along with this bullshit. And now we'll see where they go with this storyline. Could it be salvaged? Is there a good payoff? Hey, anything's possible. Maybe they're going to pay off the anonymous Raw GM angle, too. I mean, I figured it was going to be Laurinaitis, but they haven't mentioned word one about the anonymous GM bullshit now in months. So, I don't have a lot of faith in this company right now. A couple of other news notes here while we are doing the show. Brock Lesnar was announced for the new WWE 12 video game. He will be part of the main roster for the next WWE and THQ release, which will be out November 22nd. UFC president Dana White signed off on the deal months ago to allow not only Brock's likeness to be used in the game, but he'll allow Brock to do media and promotion for the game as well. He will not, however, be appearing in person on any WWE shows in the near future. Dana actually spoke to TMZ.com and told them, "I love WWE and I have nothing but love for Vince McMahon. I'm totally okay with Brock being in the game." I wonder if Vince McMahon would reciprocate if the shoe was on the other foot. I somehow doubt that he would be quite as accommodating as Dana White is being. It's interesting that in many of the interviews that Brock Lesnar has done today, he did one with IGN, ESPN, a couple of other ones, when asked who he would like to face if he could have one more match in WWE, the man would be Stone Cold Steve Austin. Austin has not wrestled a match in nearly a decade, but he is quite a wanted man these days, it would appear. Obviously, Punk would love to have a match with Austin. Austin has said that if he does have another match, it would be with Punk. And I wouldn't read too much into this, you know, this whole thing with Brock talking about how Austin walked out on the company and ran away from him and didn't want to put him over and all that, which I saw that in two different interviews. That was in reference, by the way, to the planned Austin versus Lesnar match. There was going to be a Brock Lesnar-Steve Austin King of the Ring qualifier on Raw back in 2002. It was going to be just given away for free on television with no build, and Austin thought that it was ridiculous to give a money match like that away, and he just walked out on the company. And that wasn't the only reason Austin walked out. There was a lot of things going on at the time. He was just very disappointed and dissatisfied with creative overall and had some health issues, and he just walked out. And to the best of my knowledge, Austin and Brock had talked about it. And Austin made it clear to Brock at the time that he was not trying to avoid putting him over. It was all just a matter of business. So this is probably just Brock working everybody and trying to build some heat for a match that, quite frankly, is never going to happen. So there you go. The video game looks kind of cool. I was looking at some of the clips. I actually just played the Legends of WrestleMania game for the first time over the weekend at a friend's house. And, you know, I used to have a Nintendo and Sega Genesis, Super NES, and all that, but I haven't really been a gamer in many years, and to me, it's kind of pointless to buy a PS3 or a Wii or an Xbox to play on an old 25-inch CRT television set. like I have here. But I played this game over the weekend on an HD LED flat panel in all of its 47 inches of glory. And it was quite fun, I have to say. We also tried a WWE All-Stars demo for the that was the game that came out earlier this year. But the demo only gives you access to two superstars. So that would be Rey Mysterio and the Ultimate Warrior of all people. Talk about a mismatch. All that little pipsqueak, by the way, I was the Warrior, and all that little pipsqueak kept doing was reversing my moves. So I figured out how to pull a chair out from underneath the ring, and I just pummeled him with it until I got disqualified. So hopefully I'll have a chance to play the new game at some point after it comes out. And the only thing I could say is I just wish they still made PC versions of these games, which they stopped doing a long time ago. In fact, I think the last WWF or WWE game that they made for PC, I could be wrong about this, but I think it was In Your House, which is from the mid-90s. I have that game on a CD-ROM somewhere. And yeah, that's going back a ways. One last thing here. Travis Tomko. This comes via SEScoops.com. Former WWE, TNA, New Japan talent, of course. He was Tyson Tomko in WWE. He is currently being held in Florida's St. Johns County Jail on $7,500 bond. According to a police report, he was arrested Tuesday morning on a robbery charge after allegedly stealing oxycodone, which is a painkiller, from a nearby CVS pharmacy. He then went to a nearby Chili's restaurant and allegedly asked for a spoon and went into the men's bathroom. That's always a sign of trouble. He was in the men's room for close to 40 minutes, and at that point, the cops were called. When they arrived, they observed Tomko with needle marks and blood on his arms. And according to the report, Tomko later admitted that he has a drug problem. So hopefully he can get that taken care of. Again, WWE has that policy, that standing policy, where any talent that's ever worked for them at any point is eligible for their drug rehab. And I think he might be a good candidate for that program. I will say this, though. If Tomko does go to jail, I hope that nobody brings up that infamous pay-per-view match he had with Stevie Richards a couple of years ago, where he kept referring to him over and over as a faggot. That's what he kept calling Stevie. This is when Stevie was this stupid angle where he would come out dressed as a woman, and this went on for weeks, and everybody pretty much knew that it was Stevie Richards, and then finally he came out. I don't remember what happened. I think maybe Tomko already had a match or something, and he just beat the crap out of Stevie. I mean, it was almost to the point of being disturbing, and he just kept saying that F word over and over and over again. And point being, that might not go over too well with the other inmates. There is a reason they call it the pokey. And that's all I'm going to say about that. But in all seriousness, hopefully the guy gets the help he needs. They put the mugshot up, and it looks like bad times for Tomko, so hopefully he can get back on track. I have time for a couple of mailbag questions here. I spent over 3 hours yesterday, by the way, manually responding to people. I was totally backlogged with questions, and I apologize for that. But I think I pretty much got to most everybody. I know there may be a few I skipped here and there, but I think I did get back to most of the people that sent me letters, in some cases that went back to August. So I did spend some time doing that yesterday and gotten some new questions and some other ones here that I've answered. Let's take this one here. This one comes from Tony, and his question was, many fans complain about WWE being PG and that it sucks, it's killing the business, they should go back to TV-14 or the Attitude Era. Can you explain to me how PG is hurting WWE and not the booking of the shows and the talent? Am I missing something? Well, hell, I mean, after Raw Monday night, I think it's obvious that the booking sucks. You know, the thing is, it's an easy argument for people to make to just blame everything on PG. Not just better booking, better talent, which is not to say they have bad talent on the roster, but there's a lot of great talent that is just sitting there down in Florida doing absolutely nothing. And better booking, better talent, more time to build between shows is going to do a lot to help your product. And it's going to go a hell of a lot further than any middle finger, crotch chopper, naked boob ever could at making the product better. So it's just a crutch. People love to bitch about PG this, PG that, without realizing that WWE was PG for a long time before they went TV-14. And their product back then was a hell of a lot better than it was now. Mike Gallagher writes in with two quick questions. Number one, do you think Shane McMahon could have been a full-time wrestler if he wasn't Vince McMahon's son, based on the matches that you've seen him in? I think with proper training, Shane would have caught on very quickly. And for somebody who never really did, to the best of my knowledge, have any professional training, other than just watching matches and being around the business, I thought Shane was a hell of a performer. He did a lot of very stupid shit that he may regret as he gets older. He took a lot of very unnecessary risks. And there were some wrestlers who were bothered by that. I mean, a lot of wrestlers liked Shane, and they respected his guts and his balls. But sometimes he would rub people the wrong way. He would steal moves. I mean, the most egregious example was probably WrestleMania in 2001 when he faced his father in that father-son street fight, and he busted out a Van Terminator, and he did the which he would call the coast-to-coast. He jumped from one side of the ring to the other and smashed a garbage can in Vince's face. He stole that move from Rob Van Dam, so... Not everybody was necessarily fond of Shane, but I think he would have caught on very quickly. And the second question from Mike, since commentary sucks of late, just wondered who do you think is the funniest, or rather, what do you think is the funniest line delivered by Jerry Lawler back when he was at his best? And as I told Mike, Lawler had lots of funny one-liners back in the day. If I did my research and went back, I could do an entire podcast, quite frankly, of Jerry Lawler one-liners. I was always entertained, personally, when he would rag on Stu and Helen Hart. And one of my favorite was, very basic joke, but it just made me laugh. He said, Helen was so old that she remembers when the Dead Sea was just sick. And I remember when I heard that joke, I thought, so simple, yet so effective. And Lawler was great. I mean, he really was. He was great back in the day. And he could be great now, too. I think part of it is, obviously, he's older and... He doesn't care. And my God, I mean, you watched that TV show last night, and who can blame him? He sits there every week. He sees the same shit that you and I do. He sees his good friend Jim Ross get humiliated practically every other week. It's hard not to care, quite frankly, when everything is so scripted and so convoluted and crappy right now in WWE. And again, he's playing babyface. Back then he was a heel. It's very different. But that's one of my favorite Jerry Lawler lines. Ryan has an interesting TNA question. Member of the Triple Threat he is. Seems that Sting is going in and out of being the crazy Joker character an awful lot. He's still wearing the makeup, but sometimes he acts completely normal, other times he is the Joker. Do you see a reason for this? Should they just book him one way or the other? Which do you prefer? I thought the Joker character was brought on by losing the title. He regained it, but still acted insane. He's not the champion now, but goes in and out. As I told Ryan, sadly, he may have actually gone insane. I mean, he's worked in TNA now for almost a decade. Wouldn't you go insane, too? Nate from Chicago has a question about Kofi Kingston. Says, do you think it's time for WWE to drop or at least change up the Kofi Kingston gimmick? It ran its course, and I find his music and overall Jamaican persona quite annoying. I've been fine with Kofi ever since he dropped the accent. I thought the stuff he was doing with Randy Orton... Remember when Randy Orton was given the car as a present by Legacy, and then Kofi was standing on top of the car backstage cutting a promo, and he was keying the car and poured paint all over it and everything, and I just thought he was going in the right direction. I was in the Garden. I was in Madison Square Garden for Raw when he had that great brawl in the crowd with Orton and did the boom drop, and of course it all went downhill from there. Kofi is a great babyface character right now. Him and Evan... you know, they play their roles perfectly fine. At some point, I think it'll be time for a change, and I think I've said this before, I could see Kofi at some point going heel, or when he does go heel, if he goes heel. Maybe he won't ever go heel. But if he does, come into the ring wearing a suit, just to change things up a little bit, and I think he could be a hell of a promo, if given the chance. You know, since he dropped the phony accent, which wasn't really his, he, again... Here's another example, much like Cody Rhodes, when you hear him speak like a normal person, he sounds great. He sounds very articulate, he's very clear and easy to understand, it seems like he has some personality to him, and the thing with Kofi is, I mean, when he does talk, he talks fine, but they don't give him a lot of opportunities to talk, and with Cody Rhodes, well, I've already been down that road. Rory Bennett writes in, we all know that if The Undertaker wrestles at WrestleMania 28, it will be his last match, and his streak will be 20-0. Do you think that it should be contested under a special type of match, such as a casket match, Hell in a Cell, Buried Alive, Hearst match, or should it be a fair one-on-one? Who said Mania next year would definitely be his last match? I never said that. 20, I mean, 20 is a nice round number, but who's to say that he feels good doing just one match a year? He can go up to 25 if he wants to. Or whatever number it would be if he went up to WrestleMania 30. It's no guarantee that his next match at Mania will definitely be his last. And, you know, as for his last match, I always thought it would be cool for Undertaker to win with Paul Bearer in his corner. And it's fine, you know, Paul Bearer turned on him last year for the millionth time. It's wrestling. You let a couple of years go by, he forgives Paul Bearer. He can come back for one last match as his manager. But have Undertaker win and kind of kneel down in the ring to salute the urn one final time and then just disappear in a puff of smoke, you know, not to be seen again until his Hall of Fame induction. I always thought that would be kind of a neat way for him to go out. Alex Cardozo from Tijuana, Mexico. If you could be a wrestling manager and could manage any five wrestlers from any federation and any era, whom would they be and why? And I gave this some thought. I emailed Alejandro back. Alex, I'm sorry. And my list looked a little bit like this. Hulk Hogan in the 1980s. Get Coke and roids. What more could you ask for? Steve Austin in the 90s. Free beer. The Outsiders in WCW, so I could be lazy and get paid. Triple H in the 2000s, which, hey, guaranteed TV time every week. And last but not least, John Cena in the 2000s, so I could turn heel and sabotage him. Those would be my five guys. Dallas has a question here. At TLC, when Sheamus beat John Cena to win the WWE Championship for the first time, him and some friends were having an argument. Was the finish a botch or scripted? It was the planned finish. It was not a botch. It happened just as they had planned. And lastly here, Greg from Northeast Philly writes in, love the show. I had a few questions I was curious about. First, why did WWE switch from traditional steel cages to the blue and then black bars? And why did they switch back in the last decade or so to the mesh fences? Also, why do heel tag teams always take the far corner in matches? Is this a tradition or is there some weird reason behind this? As far as the cages are concerned, when WWF, back in their WWWF days, used to have steel cage matches, as most promotions did, it was the traditional fence cage, or the mesh cage, as they call it. That's what a steel cage really is supposed to be. Now, growing up a WWF fan, I was very familiar with and took a liking to the blue bar cage that WWF used for many years. To me, that's what a steel cage was supposed to be, but in reality, the only reason they went to using cages like that was because they had all these big guys, all these big, juiced-up, jacked-up guys on the roster, like Hulk Hogan and King Kong Bundy. I mean, just look at their match at WrestleMania 2. There was no way those guys would be able to scale a traditional mesh fence cage. You know, the blue bar cage, and later on they would use that cage and it was black. They actually used the black bar cage more often during the Attitude Era. The Austin vs. McMahon cage match from the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, that was the blue bar cage, but it was black. But again, Hulk Hogan would never be able to climb, for example, the modern-day steel cage or Hell in a Cell. So you had all these big guys on the roster, and of course, it was the mid-80s and late-80s of WWF. 80% or more of the roster were on steroids. There were all these big, beefed-up guys who, you know, one wrong step up the steel cage and God knows, I mean, they would tear their whole leg out. So it was just a lot easier for them, especially guys like Hogan. You know, Hogan would go around the horn, around the circuit, facing Bundy, facing Big Boss Man, Paul Orndorff, in cage matches. In fact, maybe it was because of Hogan in particular, because Hogan was the star and Hogan couldn't climb the other kind of cage. So that's kind of where it came from. And the reason they brought it back is because, quite frankly, it's not a problem like it was in the 1980s. I mean, the cage that you see today, even though I'm a bigger fan of the blue bar cage, but again, that's because I grew up on it, the cage they use today is what a steel cage is supposed to be. And, I mean, Andre the Giant was in cage matches like that back in the 70s, and he was a big guy, but I don't remember him really climbing the cage very often. So for him, it wasn't really a problem, but they didn't really have a need for it. And the other part of it also, I have heard this, is a lot of the wrestlers did not like working in the blue bar cage because it legitimately hurt. Those bars hurt when they would get whipped into them, even just slightly. Not even that they would get their head bashed in, but even just bouncing off the ropes, the cage hurt them a lot. So that's a big part of why they phased it out. As far as this tradition you speak of the heel tag teams taking the far corner, I got to be honest, I never really noticed it, so I don't really have an answer for you. My guess would be that if it does happen all the time, it must be some sort of tradition, and I say that because of the tag rope. which other people have asked me about before as well. The tag rope, which, if you'll notice, when a wrestler is on the apron during a tag team match, they've got this rope that they're holding onto wrapped around their fist in the corner. And I believe they did away with it for many years, especially in the late 90s. I don't remember seeing it. And sometime in the last several years, it came back. And that's a wrestling tradition that goes back decades. So it could just be one of those traditions that WWE adheres to, which is kind of funny because tradition is kind of a dirty word in WWE. In fact, the word wrestling, you don't hear it very often. When CM Punk said professional wrestling on Raw last night, I almost fell out of my chair. I almost wish he did not say that. I almost wish he would never say professional wrestling on the show, because after last night, shows like that, that's not professional wrestling. That's dog shit is what that is. That's not pro wrestling. That's going to do it for this special weekday edition of the Sound Off, an emergency edition of the Sound Off. I thank you for sitting through this episode. I had to vent. I know many of you feel the same way. Some of you actually liked Raw. I haven't found too many people that liked the show from top to bottom. I have seen a lot of people say that they enjoyed the first 20 minutes or so, and as I said, I enjoyed it too. It was different, and I will never criticize them or TNA or any promotion for trying to think outside the box and try something different. What do you have to lose? It's like when TNA moved Impact to Monday nights. They failed, okay? They fell flat on their face. But when they first talked about making the move, I was in favor of it because, you know what? You get one chance to try something. If it doesn't work, you don't do it again. So I give them credit for trying something a little bit different. But the only reason they did it was because they had no other choice. The show is rewritten so many goddamn times. I don't even know. I would love to know what the original version of Raw last week was supposed to look like in the vision of the creative team. Not in the vision of Vince McMahon, but in the vision of the people that are paid to write the show. Because maybe it was really, really good. But we'll never know because they're at the mercy of a madman. And what we got this week was an absolute piece of shit television show. Nobody cares about Vengeance. Nobody's going to watch Vengeance except on a stream. Or the most diehard of WWE fans. They will continue to buy these pay-per-views. But Vengeance is going to die a death, and now you got to start asking questions about Survivor Series. Everybody was so excited. Oh, these rumors about, you know, Rock. We know Rock is going to be there, but maybe Austin or Foley or this or that. Austin's not wrestling. Let's just shoot that rumor down right away. And I'm looking forward to Survivor Series because I'm going to be there. You know, part of it is just being there. It's a lot more enjoyable than watching it on TV. And I'm excited to see Rock's first match back since WrestleMania 20. I say ha to all the people who either bought or are going to buy tickets to WrestleMania thinking they're seeing Rock's first match. I'm seeing Rock's first match. That shouldn't be the only thing that I'm excited about right now. A couple of months ago, I was raving about this CM Punk stuff, and the guy is dead. He is dead and buried. Yeah, he's on top. He's a main event player. He sells a lot of t-shirts. I'm sure he's very happy. But what got people very excited about Punk was that he felt special. You know, people were comparing him, and I hate when people get carried away and, oh, he's the next Steve Austin. He's the next Shawn Michaels. I hate it when people do that. It's not fair to the performer. There's never going to be another Shawn Michaels. There's never going to be another Steve Austin. Let them be themselves. And Punk had something. And whatever Punk had is gone. It is gone. And it ain't coming back. And I don't know where this storyline is going, but I know this. They have gone off the rails. And they're going to have to do a whole lot to get this thing back on track. And as I ranted on before, this whole thing about people with power in wrestling, nobody cares. If I never hear another word about a GM or a president or a COO or a CMO or a CFO or a CEO, I would not care because it doesn't matter. Nobody gives a shit about any of that. I don't care that Triple H lost the COO titles. Who cares? He's a wrestler now. What difference does it make? Vince McMahon is back in power, or is he? Apparently he's not. But yet he's coming out on the TV show. It says chairman on the screen. He's making decisions. He's meeting with the board of directors behind Triple H's back. I don't know what's going on here. All I know is I've got Ring of Honor episode number 3 sitting in queue waiting to be watched. I cannot wait to watch Ring of Honor this week. There's a Ring of Honor title match between Davey Richards and Roderick Strong that I've heard rave reviews about. And as ROH continues to introduce new viewers to their characters, it's just a very enjoyable TV show. I'm very excited, especially after watching what I saw last night to cleanse my palate of this dreck and watch a real professional wrestling show. I might even try to catch Impact if I'm around on Thursday night. Anything to make me forget about what I saw last night. And if you have any questions you'd like to submit for the mailbag, if you'd like to vent about what you saw, if you disagree and want to debate me on the merits of last night's show, hey, come right at me. I'll beat you down. There's no way you could possibly defend that TV show last night. There ain't no way. But you could try. You could email me at thesolomonster@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter. It's @solomonster. And on Facebook, friend me on there, facebook.com/thesolomonster. And that's important because I may be doing another Facebook mailbag in the next couple of weeks. I haven't done one of those in a long-ass time. And the way it works is, if I do one day, I'll announce in advance what day it's going to be. I put a thread up on Facebook. You post questions, and I will take as many questions as I can from that thread and answer them on the show in lieu of doing email questions. Just 1 week. So I don't know when I'm going to be doing it, but if I do it, the only way you could be part of that is by friending me on Facebook. So go to facebook.com/thesolomonster. And, of course, you can subscribe on iTunes or subscribe to my YouTube channel. My username is TheSolomonster. And if you do all four of those things, you are officially part of the Fantastic Four. And you could be part of the Triple Threat, still a very elite group. And for those of you that have written in saying, well, I'm part of your Double Trouble, that doesn't cut it anymore. Now you've got four different options. There's no excuse to only have two of four from now on. So keep sending in those match suggestions for that new segment I'm going to be debuting, possibly as early as this weekend. It's going to depend on whether or not I have time to watch the first match. But I'm going to be doing this segment where you guys submit a match, a classic match. It could be classically good, classically bad, WWE, NWA, whatever it may be. As long as I can find it online or already have it on DVD, I'll watch it, I'll break it down, analyze it, give the backstory behind it if there's anything interesting about it. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to call it yet. I've had a couple of suggestions, and I'm willing to take more. And so keep sending in your suggestions. There's some great matches. I'm actually very excited about this. I did mention that I'd probably be watching the first Hell in a Cell with Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker first, which featured the debut of Kane. There's a lot to talk about in that match. And I probably will do that first. I'm not 100% sure, but I've gotten a lot of great suggestions from you guys. So keep sending those in to me as well. So we'll be back. We should be back with a normal show this weekend. I'm sure between now and then there'll be a lot more news to talk about. And if not, for whatever reason, I'll keep you guys updated about that on Twitter and Facebook. But we should be back this weekend with another show. Thank you, as always, for downloading the podcast. Please spread the word. Let people know about it. And very much appreciate that. Until next time, be well, stay safe, and whatever you do, don't let people watch that show last night. If you have it on your DVR and there's other people in your house, maybe a small child, for example, and there's any possibility that they could stumble into the living room, pick up the remote, and possibly accidentally put that show on last night, do yourself and do them a favor. Delete that shit now.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster sounds off on SEScoops.com.